Welcome to Season 10, Episode 3 of the Ubuntu Podcast. It's Tuesday, the 21st of April, which is a lie. It's Tuesday, the 21st of March. I just read whatever is put in front of me.
Oh, well, that's the first thing that's gone wrong this evening. We can let it slide.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. Nobody will notice. And we're going to discuss what's been happening in the news and the community. I'm Alan, and I can't read. And with me is Martin. Hello, Martin.
Hello there. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. And Mark, how are you doing?
I'm none too shabby, thank you very much.
Super, super. What have you been up to then, Martin?
Well, you might have heard of this distribution. It's called Ubuntu Mate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've been working on that in my evenings for about the last week, preparing for final beta for 1704.
Ah.
But I know that you're not interested in hearing about that. You'll probably need to come up with some sort of system of me getting to talk about this and getting it all off my chest at some point. And
you need to go and see a therapist or something.
Yeah, I think so. I'm feeling shunned.
Maybe we should arrange that for next week.
Yeah, maybe. Do you think so? Yes. Have an Ubuntu Mate special for a week. A one-time only deal.
Yes.
I can say the name as many times as I like.
Yes.
All right, it's a date.
Awesome.
What
have you been doing?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked. Last week, there's a guy who I follow on YouTube who had a contest to make a Linux game, and he did it on itch.io or itch.io, whatever you want to call it, as a game jam. And the goal was to just make a Linux game. And so I thought, oh, that would be really good. But unfortunately, I'm not very good at programming, which is one flaw. And secondly, I had no time to do it because I had loads of stuff going on over the weekend, so I just couldn't get involved in it. So I thought, well, I'll tell you what, I quite enjoy like mucking about with making games, so I'll make one anyway, but I won't aim to make it for this contest, which finished at 4 a.m. yesterday, or this morning, as we record this. So I've started playing with Love 2D again. I've played with it and fiddled with it for a while. I thought I'd fiddle with it again. I started making a little game, and I've got stuff appearing on the screen, and it detects joysticks and stuff, and it's good fun, and it's quite a nice thing to do in the evenings when, you know, when you want to switch off from work stuff, you know, to still sit at a laptop like you do, but do something different. So, yeah,
been doing is a this that. Is this Gardner, the Linux gamer,
yes,
that you're referring
that's exactly
to?
Right, yes.
Yes,
I just know him as
channel.
That's, yes, I forget his name and I just think of him as the Linux gamer. But yeah, it was a nice little contest, and he got quite a few people signed up, and there was a little forum. It's really nice.
I think he had like 130 people contribute to this or something.
Yeah, well, join the thing. I think there's like 20 something games that actually
got
submitted.
That's not bad, though, is it?
Yeah, and I think it was 4 or 5 days was the contest. It's not really a contest. You know, there's no real winner as such, other than like the pride of making something, which is, you know, you're winning in and of itself by doing that. Mm. You created something, but it was a nice idea because the whole goal was to make more games for Linux. And these indie developers who are, you know, making stuff, they're all like variable quality. Some of them are just like one screen, and some of them are like adventure games, and there's space shoot 'em ups and all kinds of like parodies and stuff. But
I think another stipulation was all the entries had to be open source as well.
Well, there was a rule that said they should be open source. No, it says that you'll get a bonus point if they're open source, but points mean nothing. So yeah, you could do that, but you didn't have to. But
he's going to do some Let's Plays with some of the entries and pick a winner at some point as well.
So maybe later I'll put something up on itch.io when I've got something that actually works and does more than just display, plug in your controller, and then detects that you've plugged in the controller. I actually needed to do something. But more on that another time. Should we get on with it?
Let's.
Yeah.
And now it's time for some news. What's first in the news, Martin?
Well, the first item this week is we have an operator of a website who has complained of Firefox by way of their bug tracker. complaining.
Is this a news article? Man files bug.
It is actually man files bug. Yes, man files bug complaining at Firefox.
Slow news day.
Yeah, because Firefox have got a new policy, much like Chrome, where if they detect or a user submits a site that is taking login credentials over a non-HTTPS site, that it will display a warning. And the individual that runs this website, are we allowed to say the name? Should we? Are we going to do that, or are we just going to?
I don't see any reason why not.
Well, it's been posted all over the internet.
Oil and Gas International.
It's been ridiculed everywhere already. I don't think our little podcast is going to make a huge dent in his ego.
No, maybe not. So he's complained that he didn't ask for the modifications to the page to be made, and it's impacting his business, and that his website was secure via some undescribed security protocol. And what then happened is that bug made its way to Reddit. And then what happened is people said, huh, well, actually, one of the quotes is, it's fully vulnerable to SQL injection. Just put a single quote in the login form and you get a pretty ASP.NET debug stack trace.
So basically, this is a person filing a bug in a browser because the user experience on his website changes for Firefox users and makes it look like he's not doing his job properly, right?
Well, it does make it look like he's not doing his job properly because he isn't, but also it actually injects into the login field a warning directly telling you that if you log into this website that your credentials are passing in clear.
It actually changes, does it in the form as well?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, so Firefox changes it in the form and Chrome changes it in the URL. So the URL changes to, you know, this is not a secure site or you know, in the,
or the location bar. Yes.
Yeah. So Firefox's changes are a little bit more prominent, and that was the grounds for his complaint.
Right. And so the net result was it seems like the bug has been made private or hidden or deleted or whatever. So you can't actually see the bug anymore, right?
Yeah, the bug's been made private, so you can't see the original bug. There's obviously a thread on Reddit where it's still rolling. The site is now just a plain white blank page. They were
is
able
it secure,
to
though?
what they found was is that there was a submission page on the site which took credit card information, which was passing all of that in the clear. And they were able to dump the database, which wasn't encrypted, the passwords weren't encrypted, and included in the details were the site operator's private telephone number, and they phoned him and told him that his website was actually not secure. So all of that went on. So it's not surprising to find that the website is now obviously off whilst it's being repaired.
And probably that guy is going to be out of a job by the end of the week. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. I mean, it looks like it might be a one-man band. You know, the guy that runs the site is probably not, not a server operator. It's a one-man business.
It's sad for him that he misunderstood, you know, the whole problem that was appearing and clearly wasn't technically savvy enough to realize that his site wasn't secure, or maybe he'd been told it was by the person who implemented it or whatever. We don't know.
But there are all sorts of banners over the site claiming the security of the site via, you know, secure transaction systems and various other things. So there was lots of claims it was a secure site.
But the problem that I have with this is the witch hunt that people go for. Someone who is clearly not doing their job properly. So, okay.
Or maybe doesn't even know they're not doing their job properly.
So then they get witch hunted on the internet to the point where they're kind of hounded out of their job. And some people might say that's rightly so because they're clearly, you know, storing credit card credentials. Okay, but there's ways and means of doing this thing, and absolutely blowing the guy out of the water, I don't think, is the right way to do it.
Yeah. Yep. And there's also a broader question, because this has sort of been, in terms of what browsers have been doing with insecure websites, has kind of been building over a number of years. And I think this sort of thing has started coming more to the fore now that we have something like Let's Encrypt, where it's fairly trivial for anyone to for free in have their web server like serve secure pages. But it's sort of, where is the line between making sure that users are aware of their privacy and security and needlessly shaming websites because they've not taken the step.
I can completely understand why, you know, people might want to, you know, raise awareness of this thing, and Reddit is a good way to raise awareness of a thing. Yeah. Okay. Shall we move on?
Let's.
Gitter has been acquired by GitLab. For those who don't know what those two things are, Gitter, well, from my experience of using Gitter, it's a bit like Slack. It's like a web chat thing that's got hooks into GitHub. So, for example, if you're a developer and you've got a project on GitHub and you want to discuss stuff with your developers, rather than point people at an IRC channel, you can have a nice web-based chat thing. And the nice thing is it integrates really, really well with GitHub so that you get a nice little stream of stuff that's happening in GitHub in your project. So you can see when pull requests come in and they get announced in the channel and all that kind of good stuff. And developers can chat in there and you can PM each other and you can basically coordinate your project really nicely on Gitter because it integrates really nicely with GitHub. But
I notice you're putting a lot of stress on the hub there.
Although it is fair to say that Gitter also has some integration with GitLab prior to this acquisition as well.
This accusation. Yes. And the reason why I'm being so deliberate is because, it's quite interesting. And I think there were a lot of surprised faces on the internet when it was announced that Gitter had been acquired by GitLab, because GitLab is an open source project, which is a competitor to GitHub. And with Gitter having such tight integration to GitHub, having GitLab being the owner, people were kind of surprised at this. Mm.
So Gitter have said in their announcement over this acquisition that they're going to continue to support the existing integration. So they cite the GitHub stuff and Twitter logins and what have you. But there will naturally now be a deeper integration with GitLab to allow the same functionality that GitHub users currently enjoy. But the real kicker is this. So Gitter is now going to be open sourced. And when they said they were going to open source things, they meant absolutely everything. So the whole back end, so the website, the chat clients, the mobile clients, the whole kit and caboodle is going to be fully open sourced.
So you're going to be able to do your own deployments alongside your own GitHub and GitLab
they
deployment.
They actually say precisely that, that you will be able to run up your own Gitter instances now.
Nice.
Awesome. So you can have on-premises GitLab and on-premises Gitter all inside your firewall, like for your development teams. You can have multiple instances with different projects and stuff. That is just brilliant.
Yeah. And the sort of the monetization avenue for Gitter, much like the other collaboration chat clients like Slack and HipChat and the rest, is that you usually get some free plan and it will only retain so much history, or you don't get private groups and things like that. So Gitter had a model like this and they're scrapping that. So as of now, all conversations are free and unlimited. And if you are a paying customer and you had an invoice in the last 3 weeks, you're going to be refunded. And from this point onwards, all the pro features are opened up, free and unlocked to everybody.
Wow.
It's really nice.
It's quite impressive.
Mm.
Next up, Moodle has a remote code execution bug.
It's Moodle.
Moodle is...
What's a bug?
What's a Moodle bug?
Moodle is an open source learning management system which is used by universities and colleges and schools all around the world.
You know a bit about this, don't you?
I know a bit about this because I'm a Moodle developer.
How convenient.
Oh. Yes. This is quite an... obviously, systems like this have bugs found all the time, but this one I thought was particularly interesting because it seems like it's sort of a fairly innocuous bug that might let someone... do things in a way they might not be meant to, but wouldn't have a massive impact. But the person who investigated this actually found out that it could allow any user to gain admin access, and because of some of the features of Moodle, therefore execute arbitrary code on the server.
Ow.
So the way this works is there was in the latest version of Moodle, there was a new method introduced for updating user preferences via an AJAX request just to allow some new user interface stuff to be implemented. Which is fine, but it wasn't. Basically, it meant that any user could update any of their user preferences, which, you know, what's wrong with that, right? But
is there permissions one of the user preferences by any chance?
No, it's not quite as simple as that. No. But basically what the guy worked out was, and we're going to have a link to the blog post where he discusses all of this, that some of the user preferences will be used in a way which means that they use a feature of PHP where they can serialize a value into an object, into a string, and then back again. And when that happens, you can have a special function run. So if you set the right value in your user preference, then it'll run a certain function when it does some processing on that, using that preference. And then by some other methods, by in a certain part of the code, you can use that to do an SQL injection attack, which you can use to add your user to the list of system admins in the database. And then all of a sudden you've got admin access.
So tweet size, the preferences change the code path that's executed on the server. You can get it to execute an SQL injection that modifies your permission and
makes you an admin.
Magic.
And when you're an admin, you can upload new Moodle plugins, which are basically PHP code. So you can basically then upload any PHP code you want to run.
Super. And it's, there's a write-up as a blog post, right?
Yes, and there's a patch that's already out and available for everyone.
Cool. Well, yeah. I'll link to that in the show notes. That'd be good reading.
Next up, apparently Microsoft is infesting, I tell you, Windows 10 with annoying ads. I don't know much about this, but in the face of Ubuntu's rather tame adding Amazon adverts to the dash, this seems a little bit more extreme. So what's going on with Microsoft and Windows 10?
It seems whenever, like, if you're one of those people who are blessed with having Windows on a computer, Windows 10 on a computer, pretty much every time you turn it on or update it or reboot it, it seems to, I don't know, suggest helpful things to you, like
a tip of the day.
Kind of, but they're kind of tips of the day that recommend you use more Microsoft products. So, for example, it'll say, hey, you're using Chrome. Did you know Edge is better? And it'll give you some reason why Edge is better. Like, it'll save power, battery power, or it's faster or whatever. And, you know, that after you see it a dozen times, it kind of gets annoying.
How are these adverts presented?
Little tooltips that pop up over the icon. For example, if you imagine your Windows start bar either at the bottom or on the left-hand side, and the icon for Internet Explorer happens to still be there for whatever reason, if you just forgot and it's pinned to the launcher, a little blue pop-out comes out of it to the side, and in that box gives you this useful, very useful, handy tip. There are others like, hey, you should try using Office 365. Which is another product from Microsoft. There's another one that suggests you use OneDrive. And the really convenient thing about that tip is it appears right in your file manager while you're looking at files, right?
So they've basically invented an upsell bot.
Yes, and it's all contextual. Some people have got a little bit irritated by this, and this is, you know, causing a bit of consternation, and some people are trying to find ways to turn it off and, you know, avoid having this, or just, you know, don't use Windows.
Was this allowed to be ushered in because of the terms and conditions that, you know, were poured over when Windows 10 first came out? They were quite far-reaching in terms of what Microsoft could get access to.
Well, I don't think it's even that. I mean, these are just pop-ups. You know, they're basically pop-ups on your desktop. You know, no different than.
But you say they're contextual, so they must know that you're not an Office 365 subscriber, or you're not using OneDrive or whatever.
Well, I would assume the fact that the daemon isn't running, or I've not authenticated against the Office 365 server. Yeah, I would imagine my wife doesn't get these because she uses Office 365 for work. So I would imagine she doesn't see these pop-ups. But I have seen some of the other pop-ups, and I have seen the the OneDrive one pop up on Sophie's machine when she's using it. But equally, the flip side is I've also seen a recurrent pop-up telling her to upgrade Dropbox. So it's not just Windows that's doing these kind of like, hey, you should, you know, give us money.
It's a mad partner platform as well.
Well, I don't know, but you know, I just find them as irritating as everybody else, really.
Well, yeah, that is it. I mean, I find irritating adverts on the internet irritating. So having it actually in your operating system,
punching you in the face,
deeply annoying. Yeah,
yeah. Especially the one that I find most egregious is the one that keeps telling me to change browser. Like, no, you're all right. Thanks. I'm okay. Anyway, should we look at some happy news? The Usborne publisher of books has released some more retro PDFs. These are books that came out many, many years ago, like 30 years ago, 20, 30 years ago. And they've released PDFs on their website. And these are covering things like programming in BASIC, computer-controlled robots, making music, and stuff like that. They're not super relevant, but they're nice from a nostalgic and retro point of view.
They're books rather than magazines, I take it.
They are, yeah, they're
right,
books.
Okay.
They're not super fat books. I mean, I recently took my mum to the doctor, and the doctor's surgery near her is right next to the library. And as I walked past, I had this wave of nostalgia wave over me, where I remember sitting in that library 30 years ago reading these very books. So it kind of you know, brings back some nice memories of like learning about computers.
And are these freely downloadable or are they for purchase?
Yeah, we'll put a link in the show notes. They're just they're PDFs hosted on Google Drive, bizarrely. I don't know if they're going to move those, but I downloaded a copy because I quite like the idea of, you know, having a copy and looking at them. Yes. And that's the end of the news.
And here comes a quick roundup of the community news and events. So, Mark, what's first up?
Gnomes Vala 0.36 has been released. What's Vala then?
Surely it's dead.
Vala is a programming language. Some would claim a dead programming language. In fact, Emmanuel Bassi, a Gnome developer, actually made that statement in February this year, saying that Vala was a dead language and everyone should stop using it.
Okay, which is why it's just got a new release.
Yeah. So it's a little bit of irony there that there's a new release of Vala, much to the satisfaction probably of the elementary guys, considering they make exclusive use of Vala for all of their projects.
As in, they only use Vala, or they are the only ones who use Vala?
Well, I believe they only use Vala. I could be wrong about that, but I know that Vala is, you know, a key part of their technology platform.
Right.
But there are a couple of other projects that I'm familiar with that are shipped in Ubuntu Mate, for example, and that's Synapse and Plank. Synapse is a launcher, so you can hotkey it and then search for files or search for applications to launch or perform calculations. And Plank is a dock, a bit like what you'd get in Mac OS X. And they're both written in Vala and they're actively maintained. And in fact, the person that maintains Synapse and Plank was attributed by Emmanuel Bassi as being the most active Vala user and contributor back in February. Anyway, it's not quite dead yet, apparently.
Soon. In other news, there's been a bit of consternation online after it was discovered that Firefox 52 no longer produces any audio if you don't have Pulse Audio plugged in, installed. Yeah, it's for some reason. And this is because some time ago, Mozilla announced that they were dropping support for ALSA, so they would only use Pulse Audio on Linux, which there was much rejoicing, and everyone loved that idea, and there was no negativity about that whatsoever. And then it actually released in Firefox 52, and some people had a bit of a fit because they didn't realize this, or they'd forgotten about it. And so they installed their updates just as normal on their desktop that they've been running for ages and everything's been working fine. Suddenly a browser update breaks audio. And the experience that you get in this circumstance. So let's say, for example, you're one of the distros that has this problem. Lubuntu is one of them. You update Firefox, you go to YouTube or other video sharing website and try and view a video, and you get no audio, but you do get a banner across the top that tells you, hey sucker, you should install Pulse Audio and here's how. And there's a button. And when you press the button, it takes you to a Mozilla webpage that details all about the changes they've made. It is, if it wasn't for the fact that the page was a 404 when I tried it. Whoops. So it's actually useless. You press the button and it takes you to a broken Mozilla webpage. So, yeah, they didn't do it that well, actually. So, yeah, I can see why some people were annoyed at this, despite it having been announced ages ago and Pulse Audio being the future and, you know, just install it and you're
Pulse
done.
Audio being the present.
Well, yeah.
Never mind the future. Sorry.
Pulse Audio being the future in the past. Yes.
But, I found the comments on some of the threads about this a little bit depressing. One that I did like is in reply to a lot of people basically still hating on Pulse Audio 8 years later, somebody just said, can 2017 be the year of letting things go? Which I thought was
nice
indeed.
Speaking of letting things go, Martin.
Yeah, well, PowerPC, it's being taken out the back. It's been shot in the head. 32-bit architecture has been removed from the Ubuntu 17.04 archive. So last season, in Season 9, we mentioned a couple of times, I think Debian have dropped 32-bit PowerPC as a release architecture. So they still build packages for PowerPC, but they don't actually release ISOs for it now.
Does that mean if you've got a machine running it, and you still get updates, you still get package updates, but you wouldn't do a new install right now?
Yeah, if for Stretch, so Debian 9, you can't get a PowerPC ISO, I believe.
Right.
And Ubuntu, we had a discussion at UOS earlier, late last year, about the future of PowerPC. And the general feeling was there were not enough people using it, and there wasn't enough significant developer effort behind it as an architecture. Although since then, one person did come forward and was quite upset that they hadn't been consulted in this decision. But the long and short of it is it's now been removed from the 17.04 archive. And from this point forward, there'll be no PowerPC ISO images from Ubuntu, and there will be no packages built for 32-bit PowerPC. So if you've got an old PowerPC, or maybe a newer one of these Aeon Amiga X5000s or X1000s, then 16.04 is supported till 2019 for the flavors, and 2021 for mainline Ubuntu. You probably want to look at that for your long-term support plan.
Mm.
Cool. Next up, Sona and Vinux have merged. What are these then?
Come on, Mark. So, we've talked about both of these projects in the last 9 years. You should remember them.
Something to do with accessibility, aren't they?
That's right. Yes. So Sonar GNU Linux is out from the Accessible Computing Foundation camp, and it's a Linux-based operating system. I think they've gone through a spell where that was based on Manjaro. And it is for people with all sorts of disabilities, but a strong emphasis on people who are visually impaired. And Vinux is the same. That has been based on Ubuntu for a while, and that's got visually impaired users as a target. And the two projects have come together, which is really good because they're obviously got quite a niche group of developers and a niche audience. So it's good to see those two projects coming together, but they've had quite a change of direction in so doing.
Well, both of them. Coming together and they've chosen one true platform for both of them to use.
Yes, they have. And that platform is going to be Fedora, apparently. Mm. So,
less said about that, the better.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, have they spelled out their rationale for that decision? Like, have they chosen it based on best technology and all that kind of stuff?
Well, they've got an aspiration to target more ARM devices, and the feeling that they came to was that Fedora had better ARM platform support than Ubuntu, for example, which I find a little bit puzzling. Not quite sure how they came to that conclusion, seems as though everything in the archive is built for ARM, and PPAs can build for ARM, and snaps can build for ARM. It's pretty decent ARM support on Ubuntu, I think.
Yeah, and what ARM devices are they thinking of? Are we talking like a Vinux, Sonar, whatever the new name of this project will be, build for ARM Chromebooks, maybe, for low price computing?
I saw mention of some of the popular single board computers, but nothing about Chromebooks, but maybe it's a target, I don't know.
Interesting.
So yeah, and the other thing is they currently use GNOME and Mate, and all the developers from both these projects, and also from Hipra. Hipra are a French startup that also make a Debian-based accessible operating system, which uses the Mate desktop. But all of those are in the Mate developer channel. So we have very strong ties with all of these unsighted developers, and we give quite good attention to their requirements in Mate. So hopefully Mate will come out as their preferred desktop in all of this as well.
We'll have to follow that and see what comes out of it.
See what happens, yeah.
Awesome. Next up, there's been an unboxing video of the KDE Slimbook that we mentioned, I think we mentioned previously, didn't we? New laptop that ships from Spanish company that makes these Slimbooks. It ships with the KDE out of the box. And the video that surfaced is on Jonathan Riddell's blog, and it's actually him doing an unboxing. It looks like while he's doing a talk or something, giving a presentation, and the video is filmed by an audience member as Jonathan, you know, pulls the laptop out of the box and shows you the contents of the box and then turns the laptop on. Seems to boot nice and fast. I was quite impressed with that. Looks very ultrabooky, very thin and light. It looks really nice.
Yeah, cool. So we'll have a link to the video and the Slimbook site where you can find out more about those devices.
Great.
Awesome.
And we have one event just to mention very quickly. A couple of shows ago, we mentioned that FOSTalk Live 2017 is happening on the 24th of June in King's Cross, London at the Harrison Pub. The tickets are now available. They're not on sale because the tickets are free, but there is a limited ticket allocation and 50% have already been taken. So if you're thinking about going, head over to fostalk.com and get yourself a ticket.
And this isn't like OGCAP where we pretend it's sold out and then we release a load more tickets. Yeah. There's a really small room for this.
Yeah, so I think the initial allocation is like 75 tickets, so not very many. So if you want to come, get over there now.
Looking forward to that.
Yeah, me too.
If you're in the US, you can give us a hand by leaving us a rating on Google Play Podcasts to tell others what you think of the Ubuntu podcast.
That's all for episode 3. We'll be back next week when we'll be finding out everything you ever needed to know about the distro which shall not be named.
Until next week.
And why we'll also it's called the distro that shall not be named, maybe to clear up some confusion for our new listeners.
And we'll be bringing you some GUI love. Super.
That sounds nice.
That was all perfectly seamless and without any
issues. Seamless. There was absolutely no technical difficulties whatsoever there. That
See
was
you
great.
Next week.
Bye.
Told our Telegram group that we had got a special guest earlier. I'm going to have to rescind that now, aren't I?